For February the 3rd, 2023, we talk about Hi-Fi Rush, Days Gone, Farthest Frontier, and much more. Welcome to Level 445. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jala Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome, Jala, and also congratulations. This is the first time you've been on since your nuptials.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah. I'm so tired. Like, that's the continuing theme. But, like, preparing to leave for that length of time and then coming back to a trash fire at work, closing, and then people being out that I have to cover all at the same time has drained me. Although I did start working out. I was mentioning this in the green room. I did start doing some cardio again this week because I'm now going to be officially cutting at the gym, which means I will trim up and I will become very defined. And that means that I will have lots more energy because I am doing cardio again.
Mm.
Yay.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. What else is going on?
Well, I have other news that's good and bad. So I will say the bad thing up front. So a good friend of mine and a repeat guest on Jalachan's Place, Marcus, is in a threatening situation due to COVID-related unemployment and is about to be evicted. So if listeners have a few bucks to kick their way, they are a comic artist at patreon.com/randomrain. You can also DM them on social media for a direct donation link or commission information because they are a comic artist. They are also an animator, a photographer, a former model, a former belly dance instructor, a personal trainer. Like, they do everything. Why? This is one of the reasons why I absolutely love them, because, like, there's a lot of common DNA here, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, yes, they go on social media by Marcus_Rasan, R-S-A-A-N. And that'll all be in places, I'm sure, so people can take a look at that.
Yeah. Help them out. Nobody should be evicted.
Mm. Correct. Yeah. So that's the bad-ish news. So if folks have, you know, just a few bucks, that would be great. Anyway, good news, though. Most of the electrical in my house is working again.
That's good. After the seemingly random, it was your dad who said, I didn't touch anything.
Yeah. Well, he used the microwave, and the microwave was on a circuit with, like, the air, the window AC unit, and then some other stuff that was in their bedroom. And, like, anyway, it just blew the circuit. And we were trying to figure out where the short was forever. And so the first step to that was mapping the electrical. And this house is wired in such a wackadoo way. Like, I'm going to have to actually buckle down and schedule a time to do the weird homeowner, you know, fixer-upper kind of podcast episode at some point with you, Cole, because that's an ordeal that was. And then, like, going around trying to change out every plug and, like, go pull all the wiring out and praying that it's not in the wall itself somewhere. We found, like, the problem for one of the shorts. And that's after how many months? I don't even know when this started. Like, it's been a long time. It's been like 3 or 4 months, I feel. And anyway, there's only, like, one wall outlet and one overhead light that does not work still, but everything else works. So we're still in process on the rest of it, but we have power in places.
That's good. The conditions that you described were not tenable.
Yes, welcome back to the first world.
Right.
Oof.
So also, like, another weird first world situation to happen. So society's homophobia and fat phobia led me to dig into Sam Smith's new Gloria album, and it's Baller AF. Okay. Absolutely love it. And not only that, but me listening to it had Dave listening to it, and both of us love it. They have a great voice. And I found out that their register is like appropriate for me to actually sing along with and match. So I was like, oh, yay, this is great. That means I can actually sing it and not have to like adjust my voice up or down according to, you know, where they're at.
So, yeah, that's always nice when you find those artists who you're like right in the groove for. There's a certain declaration of defeat that happens when you have to drop the octave or raise the octave as the case may be.
Well, yeah. And then too, it gets bad because like I don't, you know, like I was never trained as a singer. Like I can carry a tune, but like I wasn't trained as a singer. So like I don't have like a big range. So, you know, when you have an artist that has a big, big range, it's like, okay, I can't hit that high or that low. So, but yeah, anyway, so I mentioned the homophobia and fatphobia. It's because they had released the I'm Not Here to Make Friends video recently because this album just dropped on the 27th. And so like there was a music video, and in it they are wearing like a whole number of different outfits, and people were just, you know, criticizing them and all kinds of stuff for what they wear in there. And I'm sorry, but like they're not there to make friends. They're there to serve looks. Like it is fire. So anyway, that's all I have to say about
literally
that.
In the name of the video.
Yeah, literally in the name of the video. So
I mean, I just this is something that like I've had to struggle with my family to a certain degree, which is you don't have to have an opinion about the way somebody looks.
Yeah.
You just don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, you don't have to have an opinion about it. And not only that, but mind your own damn business. Like, yeah. Who cares about your opinion about how that person looks? Like, who really cares? You know, like, when people have opinions about how other people look, it's because of their, like, own envy, insecurity, or whatever. Like, they're trying to you know, make a show of something.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, so that's all my news.
Thanks for the recommendation. Ben, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. I think I already mentioned in the pre-roll, but I'll mention it again, is today's like the first time that it's light out in Seattle while we're recording. So that's very exciting. Like I think in the past week it passed the 5 o'clock mark for when the sun sets. So
nice.
That's a big deal out here. We don't have light, guys.
We don't have light. Like Texas doesn't have electricity.
And you know what? My electricity went off twice in the last week because there were some storms. So yeah.
Jeez, wow.
Like that's even like a gut punch. Thanks, Dennis.
Did anyone, this might be hyper local, but did anyone watch the Bengals game over the weekend? Does anyone care?
I did. It was Sag. I mean, it was a great game. It's just hard to beat the Chiefs and the refs.
Right. Yeah.
I got to meet up with friends for it. So that part was a win no matter how the game turned out. But sorry, Cole, I interrupted.
Plus side, now I don't have to care about the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. It frees up a Sunday. You only get so many Sunday nights, you know. Yeah. I didn't watch the game. Not again. It's just you know, I caught all of the frustrated opinions from people on Twitter as they were as they were watching it.
Your blood pressure is lower as a result.
I mean, I was still on Twitter, so yeah. Well, it's good that you got to watch it with friends. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Dennis, how about you?
I went to a physical arcade this week.
Ooh, which one?
So in Sharonville, Arcade Legacy, which is like a Cincinnati chain of arcades, just opened up a new location.
Okay, so they're not doing it's not the in the dead mall, the super scary dead mall.
No, super duper scary dead mall. No,
yeah,
I think they've moved out of that. Now they're in their like own location that you don't have to go through a haunted mall to get to. And apparently there's another one in Newport just across the river for anyone who's local. But yeah, this one in Sharonville is new. And is super cool. It's so new that they don't have the bar or food in yet. So it's just purely an arcade. but it is like three levels of arcade awesomeness.
Oh, wow.
So it is, I think it's $5 if you want to play for an hour, unlimited play, or $10 if you just want unlimited play period for the day. So pretty economical in my estimation of things.
Oh, yeah.
The top level is a ton of different arcade cabinets and a good number of pinball tables. And just like really cool stuff. All the, you know, like Street Fighter, Crazy Taxi, Rampage was one of the games that is near and dear to my heart. I think that's my favorite arcade cabinet is Rampage.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, a bunch of other stuff like that. And then pinball tables. Of note, there was a Haunted House, which is a pinball table that I've played the digital version of.
Oh, it's so good. Haunted House is so good.
Yeah, the multiple levels going on and everything. And I saw it. I was like, oh, my God. Like, I can play it for real. And then it was broken, and I couldn't. So I was very sad. But the other pinball tables I played were great. So that's the first level. It's just a ton of arcade stuff. You could spend all day there alone. But you go down a level, and they have, like, a dedicated pinball arcade, which is probably 30-ish additional pinball tables. And they are 50 cents a play, but they are,
I was going to say that like the pinball cannot be covered under the $5, the hourly rate. Yeah,
no. Yeah. So they charge 50 cents a play there. But it's all like the modern tables and then like the really popular older tables.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's where they put the primo pinball experience, but you go down another level and in the basement is a giant area just filled with TVs and consoles.
Oh.
And it is like, you know, games hang out down there. There's a row of fighting cabinets along the wall. And then there's just a ton of like CRT TVs, modern TVs, retro systems, modern systems. And you just rent out controllers to whatever system you want to play. Go sit at that TV. And at least for the N64, which is what I played, it's a emulation where they've just got like everything, play anything you want. And that was super cool. Cause I went with my kids and it was like, all right, you guys like Mario Kart, you like Smash Brothers. I'm going to take you back. We're going to play N64 Mario Kart and Smash Brothers.
What do they think? Also,
they loved it. Yeah.
Do not think that you're fooling me. You are talking about video games in the opening. So.
Oh, no, I at this point, it's unspoken, right? So at first, I had to explain the whole idea of, like, where your hands go and where the Z button is.
The N64 controller is basically the Lament configuration. It's the puzzle box from Hellraiser.
Yes, it is. Yes, just, yeah, I had reinforced from fresh eyes that controller does, in fact, suck. But once we got that figured out, Mario Kart went well. But the thing they really latched onto was Smash Bros, like the original Smash Bros. Because I think, you know, it's a little bit from a simpler time. And I know like people that actually play, Ben, you might be able to correct me on this. Like I think there might be a lot more arcane bullshit in the N64 Smash Bros.
What do you mean by arcane?
Like wave dashes and cancels and all this stuff.
That's in the GameCube version. The N64 GameCube doesn't have that one. Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. So the lower fidelity in terms of gameplay technicality just made it feel very accessible. And we had a great time playing, and probably spent, as much time on that as we did in the arcade upstairs. But anyway, yeah, just a really cool space. And one I look forward to going back to.
Was there a Smash Brothers character that they desperately wanted to play but couldn't because it wasn't there?
Oh, that's a good question. No, they didn't even blink an eye that there's only, you know, like two rows of characters.
Yeah.
And I think it's because the amount that they mess around in Ultimate, they really haven't unlocked that many characters.
Oh, yeah.
So, tell them why, like, Dennis.
Yeah. I insist that when they get like the shadow person or whatever, like a challenger appears, that they fight him. And that doesn't usually go well.
They'll just walk off the map sometimes.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
So one thing you're not supposed to do.
I know, yeah. And then all the jumps to get back up don't really happen. But anyway, they had a blast, and that space was really cool.
Nice. It's good to hear that they are thriving. It's abandoned. It's a cool abandoned mall. Like, abandoned, you know, dead malls are a treasure, but also getting in there was real, kind of Silent Hill.
Yeah. Real depressing. Yeah. And thriving they were, by the way, because this place was packed.
Well, I mean, three floors. Good God.
Mm-hmm. Three floors and like a good crowd of people on every single floor.
Nice.
And again, that's without a bar or a restaurant. So I'm excited for that place to come fully online. It's not even its final form.
Yay. Do they have like Xbox and PlayStation 2 rentals for those consoles as well?
Yep. All the way through PS5.
That's awesome.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I also had an in-person family fun time thing. My brother called on Saturday and said, hey, do you want to go bowling? We have a bowling alley in town. It's been forever since I've been bowling. And there's something about a bowling alley, specifically around here. Like, I imagine there are newer ones, but every bowling alley that I've ever been is like just perpetually stuck in the 70s. So that was fun. Boy, I suck at bowling now. It took me a long time to get my stride back.
Well, how much did you drink?
Oh, I mean, not a lot. I think Chris and I both had one apiece.
That's your problem.
Oh yeah, it was it's been years and years. Eventually, I got there. Eventually, you know, it was a little bit better, but a little bit more consistent anyway. But it was fun.
Bowling and beer is like an exercise in finding the Balmer Peak, like every time finding and then losing the Balmer Peak.
Yeah. Well, I just I always associate bowling with being really young because we did like peewee bowling. We did the kids league or whatever it was when I was real little. I have no idea why. What made my mom or, you know, just family think, hey, that's a thing that they should do. I've never really done like I had a blackout drunk bowling. Never been my never been my thing.
Oh no, blackout drunk is too far. Like you said, you gotta have, or like Ben said, you gotta be. I for me, it's like 2 to 3 beers deep, and then
yeah. So yeah, that's my thing. Mostly just enjoying having. Man, it is really nice having a producer. It's very nice having Gwen help us. just in terms of A, she does very good work, but also B, see last week where I talked about like, oh yeah. Didn't realize what I did. So, well, I think we should talk about games now more so than Dennis already did. He knows what I'll he did. It. So that means doing the regular kind of show, what with the, you know, the grind, the multiplayer and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you've been away the longest, so I will throw to you.
Yay! So I will talk about the other two games that I said I was going to talk about when I got back. So these are things that I played a minute ago. I am currently actually in the middle of two different Fire Emblem games, Fire Emblem Fates and Fire Emblem Echoes, because that dropped and I've been playing that. I will give you very, very brief note about that. Just overall, Fire Emblem Fates, boy, is this game horny. Fire Emblem Echoes, boy, it's not horny. Hooray. Oh. And not only that, but for the English voice actors, the person who plays Alir, the male Alir, is actually an old friend of mine, Brandon McGinnis. And he also sings the English version of the opening song, and he does a phenomenal job. So I found that out, and I mean, I had already pre-ordered the game, but then it was like, well, damn, normally I play these on Japanese, and normally I pick the female character, and that is what I am playing right now. Mm-hmm. But once I finish the game, I will probably open it back up again and then play it again on English so that I can hear Brandon's voice work. Also, Brandon's husband plays one of the characters as well. So,
Nepotism.
So anyway, but like, it's been actually a refreshing change. It kind of reminds me more of Fire Emblem Echoes, which I talked about. That was the last Fire Emblem that I played. So, Anyway, I'll talk more about that later and do like a kind of compare contrast once I've gotten enough under my belt to talk about both of them. In the meantime, however, I will talk about Dragon Ball FighterZ.
FighterZ.
I'm going to need you to spell that for me.
Fighter and then capital Z.
Just pretend to be saying it.
All together. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it was developed by Arc System Works and published by Bandai in 2018. And it is a rather successful adaptation of the anime. This game actually feels like Dragon Ball when you're playing it. And it's 3-on-3 2D fights built around a beginner-friendly combo system with accessibility options to simplify the controls even further. And there's basically four attack buttons. There's light, medium, heavy, and then a special attack button that is, for most characters, a projectile. There's no complicated special move input commands like charges or 360 moves or dragon punches. Basically, if you can throw a fireball in a Street Fighter game, you can perform most any of the techniques in this game.
And they're relatively standardized across characters. I remember appreciating that.
Yeah,
I played a few hours of this around the time it came out.
Yeah. So you have capacity to do two very damaging auto combos by just mashing lighter medium attack. And you also have a homing attack that allows auto combos to land. And these two factors mean that basically any low skill tactic is going to be rather effective. So this game ends up being very accessible, even for people who are not fighting gamers, generally speaking. Play is really extremely fast and fluid. It feels like while it might be easy to learn, it could also be really, really difficult to master because the tactics for something like this do not port directly from any other fighting game that I know of. Like, I can't think of a title that this is the most like. I mean, I guess if I were to pick something and just say, you know, like this is the closest analog I have, probably Marvel versus Capcom 2. Just because that game, it felt like it was really easy for people to land combos and super attacks and stuff in there, but this one simplified even over that. So, anyway, the characters do play similar enough that they don't feel totally foreign when you switch to a new one, but they're also unique enough that they have a distinct feel from the other characters. So, it's not 100% like, oh, everybody's a cookie cutter, but at the same time, it's not so wildly different that you don't know what you're doing if you put it on random.
And there's also a team composition kind of element to this too, because you, as part of your moves, you can summon in assist. There are assist moves. Yeah.
There's assist and you can swap out in the middle of battle as well.
Yeah. And those assist moves can be like wildly different, and they're not all like attacks. Like if you have Krillin on your assist, he'll throw you a Senzu Bean.
Yeah. And you can pick the different type of assist that you want them to have. So that's another reason why I think of Marvel versus Capcom 2, because that's the way the system worked in that game. Is it's a 3-on-3 fight in MVC 2, and you can pick your assist type. So, but in this game, you can also teleport around, which is very fun to do. It's very, very, like, when you first pick it up, like I was like, oh my God, this is so fast. I don't know if I'm going to actually be able to keep up with what's going on. But actually, it's because of how easy the inputs are, even if you just pick it up and have never touched a Dragon Ball game before. Like I played one Dragon Ball game once for an hour and I streamed it live. I think it's still on YouTube, and I got so mad and I set it down and I could not ever go back to it. And I never played another Dragon Ball after that until now. So...
Which Dragon Ball game was that you did?
You have to look on YouTube. YouTube.com/Jellichon. Go find it. Anyway, some Dragon Ball game. Anyway, you can also collect the 7 Dragon Balls by performing combos, apparently. I have not done this, but apparently you can. Auto combos will give you a random one, but true combos will give you one of the Dragon Balls by the number of hits divided by 10. That's just a factoid that I found out on the internet. I kind of want to like go look up somebody getting all the Dragon Balls and doing it, because when it's activated, you can wish to increase your power, revive an ally, recover health, or increase resistance to damage. So like you have various like perks you can get out of that, but it's not like a
kind of selfish if you don't revive anybody.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like,
anyone you want to revive? Come on now.
Well, at the same time, it's like, couldn't you just ask to win the fight and then that's the end of the fight? I mean, like, no. You know, but anyway,
you're getting at Dragon Ball plot holes.
it's one of those like can't wish for more wishes kind of deals.
Yeah, you can't
wish for more Dragon Balls.
Also, if you revive somebody and they die again, can you do an even better set of combos to get the Namek Dragon Balls, which can revive somebody a second time?
Right.
Because the Earth ones are not that powerful. Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, compared to Samurai Showdown, which is what I talked about on the last episode I was on, this one is also beginner friendly, but Fighters is more hectic and potentially more confusing, but it has overall higher energy and accessibility. So Samurai Showdown is more of a traditional 2D fighter, and Fighters feels like Dragon Ball actually successfully translated into a fighting game. And they're very, very different animals. Like Dave and I spent some time just going through a bunch of different fighting games one night, and we were playing a bunch of Samurai Showdown on random, and then we did Dragon Ball Fighters on random, and we had more fun with Fighters than we did with Samurai Showdown, even though we really liked Samurai Showdown a lot. And we're like, oh, all of these characters are really new and different, but there's just like so much going on screen, and it looks like the anime, and there's like little cutscenes, and it's easy to pick up, like ridiculously easy to pick up. So that's why it was more fun to play that one, because it's familiar characters and everything.
Yeah.
So there's,
do you have a character that you tend to, that you tend to gravitate toward?
I just pick it on random, and I always put Vegeta in there, some version of Vegeta in there, but that's about it. That's like not because, oh, Vegeta has like the move sets I want. It's just because it's fucking Vegeta. Come on,
dude.
So anyway, there is a story mode and offline versus as well as online versus. I've not done online versus. I've only ever played against Dave and done the story mode. So the story mode is just a really inane plot, and it doesn't feel very compelling. It's a bunch of clones that showed up and they're wrecking the planet. It's just us and lots of Gokus. But one fun element, though, is that Goku's body is inexplicably inhabited by the player. And you just like possess Goku for no particular reason. And then you can also switch to other characters, too, which means that, you know, like in the narrative of the story, it's addressing the fact that you can play all these different characters by saying, oh, you can transfer your consciousness into another person's body. And like it happens in this little animated sequence and everything.
So it's like the creepiest camera guy from Mario 64.
Yeah, but it actually puts the player, of course, directly into the plot. But it also explains why you have to go through tutorials and how you can control all the fighters, which I can appreciate that because otherwise tutorials make me very mad, but I did not mind the tutorials in this game because of the way it was presented to me.
Yeah.
But for some reason though, all their powers are sealed except for when the player controlling them, the player is controlling them. So that means that the characters need the player in order to fight and save the planet, because for some reason their powers got sealed away by, I don't know what, because inane plot. So
creepy undertones.
Yes. So when you pair up characters that wouldn't actually pair up in the anime, they actually have these fun interactions too when you're fighting, which is really like the highlight of non-fight moments in the game, where they're just like, I don't know about this or whatever, and like they just have these fun little interactions. And anyway, like allegedly some of the fun of the online version is in the lobby where you have a chibi avatar that interacts with others with emotes and stickers and stuff. But I don't know. I'm pretty sure there's going to be trolls everywhere because online. But anyway, that's all I've got about Dragon Ball Fighters. I need to play more of it, but I set it down because I started playing all the Fire Emblems in the universe.
At once.
For Dragon Ball, is it a character unlock system, or do you have all the characters from the start?
Well, it depends on, like, okay, if you are playing just like the versus mode, then you have everything unlocked. Like the base characters unlocked, and then whatever DLC characters you've mm-hmm. purchased access to. In the story mode, you have to unlock everybody as you go, because you have to go rescue them first from all the Goku clones.
Gotcha.
So
you can only possess them if you possess them.
Indeed. So anyway, the other thing that I was playing before was Super Bomberman R, which was released by Konami in 2017. The story is the evil Emperor Bugler is trying to take over the universe with his five dastardly bombers. Nobody cares. Anyway, yeah, so the story mode has 50 stages.
I didn't know it only took five. Jeez.
Well,
I would have done it.
Well, see, the story mode has 50 stages. There's 10 per dastardly bomber. And it's basically 8 actual stages, and then the boss has 2 fight levels. And there are little animated cutscenes, but they're not particularly funny, even if the animation is cute, because like mm-hmm. it's just like the dumbest, most inane, like worse than the Dragon Ball game, inane conversations going on. Mm-hmm. You can't expect anything major out of a Bomberman story mode in the first place, so that doesn't bother me, but you can skip all of the scenes anyway, so that's good news if you want to play story mode to get the levels, but don't give, you know, a rat's ass about what the theoretical story is. The good thing is that you can play story mode co-op with a jump in anytime style. So like, even if you're in the middle of one of the dastardly bombers stages, you can have somebody else pop in and then pop out whenever they want. So that's cool. But unfortunately, when you play co-op, the camera attempts to frame the action, and sometimes that means the tracked enemies go out of the frame, or they're totally obscured by the HUD. So that's unfortunate. It doesn't happen a whole heck of a lot. Like, Dave and I played through it, and it doesn't happen a lot, but sometimes it does happen. The boss battles in story mode are really, really fun, though, because like the first boss stage is you and the boss in a typical Bomberman maze, and you know, you're trying to blow each other up. The second boss stage is after the boss transforms into something, depending upon what its theme is, and then you have to hit particular weak points in order to get the boss to where you can deal damage to its overall health, because otherwise, you know, it's like a Zelda boss or something where it's like invincible until you weaken it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So the way this game particularly shines is the variety of multiplayer styles. There's solo, two-player co-op in story mode, two-player battle, four-player local battle on one Switch, 8-player local battle on the TV, and 8 via 4-to-8 Wi-Fi enabled switches in the same room, and up to 8 online. So like basically there's a whole bunch of different ways to play multiplayer. However, there's only 8 default maps for multiplayer unless you unlock more via the in-game credit system, and you have to gain credits by going through the story mode. So you have to keep replaying the story mode to get credits to either buy like vanity stuff or unlock other types of bombers, or to unlock stages. So that sucks. And you also can't adjust the round rules to the same degree as you could in prior installments like Bomberman Live, where you could turn any power up on or off. You don't have that degree of control. So, but there are other things available in the in-game credit system. Some of the avatars are like Dracula, Simon Belmont, Alucard, and a bunch of other characters from other Konami games, as well as like, you know, little hats and stuff like that. But there's also different types of characters. There's bomber type, speed type, attack type, and unique type. There's only one unique type, and I don't know what that means. I played it, and I don't know what that means. Attack type means just it's just stronger. Speed type means it's faster. Bomber type is just average character, you know, whatever. So I don't know.
I mean, so like, call me a cretin if you would like to. However, the appeal of Bomberman to me back when I really enjoyed playing it was the simplicity.
Yeah.
I'm talking like in the like Super Bomberman 2, like SNES. You know, you're playing and playing with the multi-tap if you have it. I never knew anybody with a multi-tap. It was still a very fun two-player game. All of this sounds like way too much ornamentation on top of what should be a pretty basic thing, which is put Bomberman on the Switch with multiplayer, kind of like how they did with Bomberman on Xbox Live Arcade. That was great. Had fun little tricks on it, like people who died could shoot turrets from the side every once in a while.
It's kind of like I had a Bomberman on Game Boy Advance. And that one was really, really good. And that one had it where you were in turrets and you could do that. And it was really, really a fun version. I think that was probably one of my favorite versions because it did have that granularity of adjusting the rounds and stuff. And it had a bunch of maps too. So, you know, it's like they spent all this time making the story mode. And yes, you can co-op it with somebody, which is cool. But then it's like, why don't you just put... Like, you could literally just take the same maps and put them in the multiplayer mode so everybody could play on them. That's all you have to... You already made the maps. You can just take them and put them in the multiplayer. Like, I don't understand what you're doing here.
So. Wait a minute. You mean Konami would take a beloved property and do something inexplicable for no apparent gain?
Yep. So, anyway... That's all I have to say about that. Like, it's fun. It's not as good as other versions of Bomberman have been, but it is still a solid play. I enjoyed the co-op story mode, but, you know, as for playing multiplayer, you know, versus battles, with only 8 maps, there's only just so much you can do. And not being able to adjust all the power-ups and stuff is kind of a drag. That's like the point, you know?
Huh. Well, that's a shame.
Yeah. Any questions?
No.
Cool.
Yeah.
Who else has something to talk about?
Dennis, I want to go to you.
All right. Yes. I have a ton of stuff to check in on. It's all stuff that I've played before, but there's lots of interesting stories. And I think it makes sense to start with Elden Ring because I'm coming to you ashamed. Cole, I found my sprint.
Okay.
I know how to sprint in Elden Ring. I learned my lesson way back in Dark Souls.
Yeah.
But there's something you were missing.
For people who don't have the context, Dennis didn't know how to sprint until I pointed it out. And that was because I was watching him do the boss run to Ornstein. So, so he got all the way through Anor Londo.
Yep. Yep. So okay. I know how to sprint in Elden Ring. I learned my lesson.
Okay.
But I have found my sprint equivalent. Okay. So, you know, as you play, you know, I expect it to be a difficult game and it was really ball busting. And, you know, all these characters that I find, the NPCs, most of them would talk about, hey, I'm going to go to Round Table Hold after I finished up whatever in-world quest line. Yeah, and so I was like, okay, cool. I can't wait to find Roundtable Hold and talk to all these people again. I wonder when I'll get to Roundtable Hold. Maybe it'll be after Castle Stormvale. No. Maybe it'll be in one of the areas that I explore in the open world. No. Maybe it'll be after the Academy of Rhea Lucaria. So, you know, I get 90% of the way through that, literally to the final boss of that area.
Okay, so you get to Rennala.
Yes. And I realized like, why is this so difficult? You know, I can't believe I'm finding all these smithing stones that are like level 3, 4, 5. But the only smithing table I've found is, you know, and can only upgrade to like level 2. So I'm kind of stuck. I wonder, like, I feel like at this point I need to look at a wiki and find out where the next smithing table was. At which point I realized the Table of Lost Grace, that area that it teleports you to and then I left and promptly never thought about again, is in fact the Round Table Hold.
I think Melanie even says, I've been tricking you. I just wanted to observe you. It's time to show you Round Table Hold. Dennis.
Yeah.
This is where you level up your weapons, Dennis.
Who pays attention to things in video games?
The name of the bonfire is the Table of Lost Grace, and that is not the Round Table Hold. Yes, there was a big round table in the hold there. I should have noticed that. Anyway, I pretty much beat the Academy Rey Lucaria without leveling up my weapons.
You know, I'm just really proud that you're brave enough to admit this in public.
So things have gotten a lot, particularly the run up to the final boss. Although you can kind of run around everything for that, but the run to what's the Flame Wolf person?
Red Wolf of Radigan? Or wait,
thank you. Yeah, that's a pretty hairy run. Mm-hmm. And you like even dashing through, there's so many magic missiles flying around that you can't really count on not taking any damage on your way in, but clearing it without leveled up weapons is pretty harrowing as well.
I'm
got through it without leveling up, and very happy now that I figured out how to level up my weapons.
Just call it an unintentional challenge run.
Yes, that is what I'm doing. That ended after Rai Lucaria.
you proved yourself.
I proved myself an idiot.
Well, the other thing that shows is that you're avoiding spoilers for the game pretty well, right? Because it's like if you watched anyone play, you would probably see them go there.
I wonder now, like, how many of these NPCs I would have seen back out in the world had I talked to them or. What have you. I went back and gave the one guy from the chapel the glintstone key after I finished Rai Lucaria.
Uh-huh.
And now I kind of wonder if I would have like run into him in Rai Lucaria.
No. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, after a fashion, you would have.
Okay.
he dies. It's a bad thing to give him.
Aww, sad.
Yeah, poor Tops. Yeah.
Wait, does he die at the entrance?
No, that's a different guy.
Okay. Well, you know, he died doing what he loved, maybe?
Yeah. getting stabbed by many, many other students.
Oh, no. Yeah. But yeah, so guys, I know where the round table hold is. And my God, the number of or the amount of dialogue I got to just churn through.
Yeah.
Once I finally got there was incredible. I have to imagine that it was designed that you would kind of get little bits doled out to you.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I the dam broke and everybody was very gabby for a long time.
Was it like a Midnight Sun simulator?
Yeah. I think so. No book clubs were started that I'm aware of. but yes, pretty much. So that's Elden Ring. And you know, kind of set it by the wayside that I finished Rai Lucaria. That is an excellent bespoke area, just like Stormvale Castle. So I loved it. I think so far I enjoyed Stormvale Castle more.
Mm-hmm.
I had more of a sense of dread
there.
And it might, like, well, I would have said it's because my weapons were underleveled there, but I didn't level my weapons until the very end of Rai Lucaria. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
That's Elden Ring.
Stormvale is hard to mess with. I like Rai Lucaria a lot, but more from a flavor perspective, you know, kind of deal. Stormvale is hard to mess with mechanically.
I will say the highlight for me was the whole rooftop section.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the entire time you're going around the rooftops of the academy, you're like, okay, surely this must be like a side path, or I won't be able to jump to that, but maybe I could. And then it just keeps going, like, it's just so good.
It makes a very good case for adding a jump button to a Dark Souls game.
Yes. So very, very happy with that. And on to... well, I haven't really figured out where next. I'm messing back around in Karim, I think it is. There's a blood dragon type of thing that is messing me up pretty good. So we'll see.
Oh, you mean Kaelid?
Kaelid, yes, thank you. Yes. Yeah. Where's Karim?
You're thinking of Oswald of Kareem. Kareem is a kingdom in the world of Dark Souls.
There we go. That's Anyway, you know, what is it? You know, Dark Souls doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes.
Maybe. Also, Caleb doesn't rhyme with Karim.
You know what? You know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And Dark Souls doesn't repeat itself. It just, you know, stuff. Anyway, yeah, I'm messing around with that dragon.
Nice.
Yeah. Any other questions about Elden Ring?
Are you sticking with the blood build?
Yeah, still with those Wolverine claws. Like them a lot. I wish I had a different Ashes of War for them. Because it's a quick step that I haven't really felt like I needed. Mm-hmm. So it's basically like a little bonus roll.
Oh, yeah.
And I would swap it out in a heartbeat for literally anything else because I forget I have it.
Yeah.
But I think this must be one of those unique weapons where it's like, oh, you know, this Ashes of War, you can put on daggers and short swords, and there's just no category for the claws that I'm aware of.
Claws are kind of niche. I've not done a build of those in Elden Ring, so I couldn't tell you if there's like a go-to, you know, Ash of War.
I've checked them all. I literally haven't found one that it would even allow me to. So
I'm going to ask a question, which might be a mild spoiler, but it also might prevent you from missing something. You can upgrade your Ashes of War eventually. I don't know if you can yet or not, but be on the lookout for that.
Yes, I'm aware that I can do that. Okay. Given that I never use, like, unless that suddenly turns my quick step into like a damage dealing dash or something like that, I can't imagine it being worth it. Yeah. But I raised my faith enough to get a spell that buffs me now. So I really hadn't been using magic much at all before then. And now I've got enough that I'm buffing myself with faith, and then I've got enough intelligence to fire some magic missiles. So I'm feeling pretty well rounded here. Yeah, that's my time in Elden Ring.
Cool.
Yeah. So let's go over to another game that I know is near and dear to Cole's heart. I'm just doing like the Cole world tour here. I'm not being disappointed. I'll talk about Disco Elysium. I have played this murder mystery game long enough to have actually gotten around to the murder mystery.
Oh, fun.
And I'm kind of bewildered, not in a bad way, but just at how long I could go without actually going and checking on the body. So like, you know, high level, you're there to investigate a murder. The body is still there, and your highest priority is like, hey, your job is to deal with the body, and people are really like disturbed that it hasn't been dealt with yet.
It's hanging right in the middle of town. It's really bumming people out.
And so I did everything but that. I went and learned all about the strike going on. I became very well acquainted with the inventory of the local Friette. I met a gardener and talked with her. I went and talked with lorry drivers and philosophized about loneliness and missing family. I had a mental breakdown trying to call my police station buddies because I realized I'm missing both my badge and my gun. That's not great.
It's not just those.
Oh, man. I made progress. I did put on my tie.
Hey.
Got that going for me.
Baby steps.
Do you have pants on?
I knew I was forgetting something. No, the whole ensemble is together. I do really appreciate that your little character portrait in the bottom left changes based on what you're wearing.
Yeah.
They're very like painterly portraits. It's something where if it didn't change with your outfit, I wouldn't at all be surprised, but a really nice touch that it does update. So I checked on the body and I threw up and I can't get back to it now, without throwing up. So my goal right now in the game is to figure out a way to actually examine this body without throwing up.
Kim's disappointment as you just keep throwing up.
Man, Kim is, I would already die for Kim.
Yeah.
Me, the player, I think me, the character would, you know, is pretty, pretty cowardly, but what can you do? That's a Cole. You talked about like, this is, you kind of got to figure out what kind of cop you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I have just gone all the way to a sniveling, overwhelmed, completely incompetent buffoon.
Yeah, no, you're in sorry cop land, my friend.
Yes, very
Homer
much
Simpson
so.
Cop.
Yeah. Yeah, you mean openly crying over the call to an entire room of your peers is not a good move. But I tell you, I'm so comfortable like leaning in, like role playing it, I guess, really leaning into that. And it feels like the game is very much like accommodating that or planning for that. And just like, yeah, it's interesting to see that feel explored versus it being a bit.
I love the your coworker's nickname for you. Just Tequila Sunset is so good.
Yeah. Learning your name and being like, no, that can't be it. It was also a very nice moment.
Like, oh, that's great.
No, what is it? My name looks like fire and smells like oranges. It can't be that. Oh, so good. So freaking good. But yeah, so I'll eventually get around to doing some murder mystery solving, I think. Or I might just kind of talk with strike workers more. I think they're probably one and the same, but no promises.
Do you got to keep your leads open, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's Disco Elysium. Any questions about that or thoughts on that?
You like Kim, so that's like 80% of my concerns about this. I knew that you would have the strength of character to have a positive view of one Kim Kitsuragi, but you can never be sure.
Yes, I mean anyone who can put up with me in the game deserves a medal.
Maybe that could be a good psychopathy test, is if somebody doesn't like Kim in the video game.
Yes. So that's Disco Elysium. And then I've continued playing Neon White. Hmm. And just wanted to check in on that. It continues to be as talky and as Vizinavi as it was before. And it continues in that thing where it's like, all right, is this a Vizinav day or is this a speedrun day? And it really, like, it just is very broken into those two pieces. However, they do, it does both of those pieces very well. And I came upon a level that I just wanted to call out as actually finally blending those two.
Oh, huh.
Yeah. So I mentioned last week that there's like the squee anime girl, Violet,
mm-hmm.
Neon Violet. And you know, she's kind of every hyperactive anime girl trope out there. But you know, she's also a bit murderous and all this stuff, and very hard to pin down. And when you, as you build your relationship with people, you unlock side quests, that are like special levels that are designed and like themed after that person, which is really cool because this is a place where like the level design is actually giving you insight to the character.
Hmm.
And so Violet's side quest, or one of her side quests that I got into, you're at the top of this like huge tower of floors. And you know, you have an ability that lets you like ground pound downwards and break through the floor to get to the next floor. You spawn in and there's like spikes above you that immediately start like crushing down towards you. So it's like, okay, this is a race to the bottom. I've got to get down through this floor. Through these floors. And every time you use that ground pound move, you know, that expends it. But then on the other side of the floor is another ground pound. So you kind of like smash into the next ground pound, smash into the next ground pound, and just do that as fast as you can because you're trying to get through the spikes.
Hmm.
Until like about halfway down, one of them is not a ground pound. It's a side dash. And if you're clicking too fast and not paying attention, you'll side dash right into another wall of spikes.
Okay. That's good. That's like ROM hack stuff.
It's like, yeah. All right. You got me. And so, you know, you go down and, you know, dash, dash, dash. Okay. Got it. Do the dash, get over here. And there's a couple other tricks like that. And then you get towards the bottom and it's ground pound down, down, down. And suddenly it breaks, you're falling and you land. And you're like, okay, what just happened? Am I done? Where's the exit? Usually there's like a little collectible to grab. And you realize, wait, the only thing on this little island that I've landed on that's below everything else is a sign. and the sign says Idiot Island. And I look back up and I can see through the glass bottom of the floor above me that the very last floor that you can ground pound through actually has the collectible on it.
Oh.
So then it's like, okay, I totally wasn't counting. I was just paying attention that I didn't get another side dash, you know?
Yeah.
So like how, okay, you got to go kind of fast to avoid the spikes. How do I do this? That's when I realized, okay, every floor actually has a number. There's a little sign on it that has a number. So great. I'll do that. Only it's not at floor number zero. It goes into the negatives. So the correct floor, like I get to floor zero. I stop and like, wait, where is it? Where's the doorway? And I almost get crushed by the spikes again. The actual doorway is on floor negative four. And that's what it's like to talk to Violet. So yeah, well done, Neon White. Like that moment, that level, I really feel like I understood something more about Violet having played it. And that was really cool because, you know, there's no dialogue from her. There's nothing that overtly says, like, makes any statements about Violet. It's just the level design gives you that feel. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I've been playing this week.
Nice. Well, it's good to hear about a little bit of consonance in those in those systems at the very least.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And that's what it's like to talk to Violet. I've got two that I'm going to go ahead and do. The first of which I know you've played, Dennis, because you had it in your section.
Yeah, I figured
on the document.
I've played little enough of it that I figured I'd just piggyback on you.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a game that took everybody by surprise. I'm talking about Hi-Fi Rush.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new game published by Bethesda, but weirdly developed by, I think it's Tango Gameworks, the company that made the Evil Within games.
And
this couldn't have
the least Evil Within game ever.
It couldn't have anything less to do with that. And I was like, oh, new Evil Within stuff. And I'm looking at just standstill screenshots of it. I'm like, oh, that's weird. It's a colorful horror game. Okay. No. It turns out a developer can make more than one kind of game.
Shock.
Yeah. In this game, takes place in kind of like a, you know, like a colorful cyberpunk future. Play as a real hyperkinetic, hyperactive, seems like a teen named Chai, who is going in. His right arm doesn't work, but he has signed on with the Vandalay Company, which is funny because that's what George Costanza's fake business is called, Vandalay Enterprises in Seinfeld. He signed on with the program where they will give people augmented parts, replace body parts for them with super robot parts in exchange for being menial laborers for them. The problem is, two problems. The first is there's an accident during the kind of augmentation process where his antique iPod kind of gets put into his Iron Man heart kind of thing. And also, this is a defect and Vandalay Industries does not actually have a very good defect program. They kill people who are defective. And so having that iPod as his heart means that everything that he does, and in fact, like everything around him, is synced to the beat of the music. And this is a character action game, like a less frenetic, like Bayonetta or Devil May Cry kind of game, you know, where it's a rhythm game as well, where all attacks and on both the enemy's part and on your part and your dodges and stuff, they're all quantized to the beat, but attacking, like pressing the buttons to the beat will give you, you know, greater success. So you get combos strung together, get more points. If you dodge on the beat, you get three dodges in a row instead of just one. You know, special attacks will have like a throw on like kicker beat in order to get like extra damage at the end of it. Everything is there, and it's a, you know, pretty simple gimmick, but it's an all pervasive one, and they do lots of really cool stuff with it. Just in terms of, you know, like it's not just in the play, but like And not just in the combat, but like there are platforming challenges. Like there are times mm-hmm. where the game will just go straight up 2D platformer, and the ways that the hazards move around are set to the beat as well. Like little background, like visual details will be moving to the beat and stuff. It's pretty neat. And all of this is in just a really beautiful cel-shaded style.
The animation is so good.
Oh, it is so crispy. It's real, especially in the cutscenes, it is real Enter the Spider-Verse kind of deal. It's, you know, on twos is the way that you would refer to it. And it is real, like, you know, just very well done and well considered animation, not like in the sense of, oh boy, it's moving so much, but they're just really relying on just like rapid transitions between key poses.
No point does it look like they are, you know, manipulating a model.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in so many games, you look at something around and you're like, okay, I can see that that is a rigged model that, you know, is moving. That's how you make a video game. That's what it looks like. But this truly looks like, you know, an animated thing you would watch on TV.
It's like the characters most, are not,
oh, go ahead.
It's the most convincing cell shading effect I've seen.
Yeah. The characters don't feel beholden to rigging, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So man, this is a really charming game. Took me a while to figure out how to play to the beat on it. You know, not because I don't have a great sense of rhythm, but you know, not a terrible sense of rhythm. It's just, you know, a little bit hard to find it amid all of the sound effects of combat and stuff. You know, these are songs that I don't know. It's easier to keep beating songs that you do, kind of stuff. Boss encounters so I've done like one boss encounter. I've done the QA bot, and that is set to Nine Inch Nails 1,000,000 off of the slip. There's licensed music in this. Don't play it in streamer mode. Obviously, if you're streaming or uploading stuff, play it in streamer mode because you don't want to get a copyright takedown. But if you're just playing it for yourself, there's licensed music if you're not in streamer mode. Like the opening is Lonely Boy by the Black Keys. Like it's good. You know, nice, upbeat,
excellent
rock stuff.
Choice. Yeah, excellent choice to introduce you to the character as well.
Yeah. Man, interesting. And just the time that I spent playing with it, which admittedly is not like an awful lot, but I'm real, like I would like to play more of it, primarily because, so this is a game that was a total surprise. I don't believe they announced anything about it. It was just like, hey, here's a new Bethesda published game on Game Pass. Here you go. Enjoy it. So like it just, everybody was like, oh okay. Wait, this rules. It is a $29.99 game at the start, and it is quite short. Okay. This feels so much like a Dreamcast game, like a game for that system, specifically with its real colorful, like very arcade focused aesthetic and kind of audacious mechanics and stuff, but also like from the Dreamcast and like early PS2 era, where just a bigger bigger publisher would just have not a B game in a pejorative sense, but like this is just a more modest product that is released at a smaller price, and that is fine. Like this is not meant to be like a gigantic, you know, world-endingly complex game. It is meant to be exactly what it is, and that is a real nostalgic feeling.
How long to beat? It's not force-fed filler to justify a higher price.
Yeah.
And how long to beat has it at 10 and a half hours? I don't know if that tracks with what you guys have put into it, but
I've done about 90 minutes on it, but like it's like I had heard like six or seven, but like a 10 hour game at this level, like this is not a slouch, like production values wise. In fact, I'd say it's one of the most attractive games I've played in a while, you know? But yeah, just, you know, 10 hours, a game can and should be 10 hours.
How do you feel about the amount of tutorializing in it?
It's a little much. Especially when they do like the double tutorial kind of thing where like the smart fridge will explain something and then you go into the little test area, like
the stage.
Yeah. And then it explains it again. I don't necessarily care for that. I was still okay. That early on, I was still so carried over by the by the presentation and the theming that it didn't really bug me that much. Mm-hmm. It by all rights, it should be like a really extremely annoying thing. But like, I don't know, the fact that your tutorial is given to you by one of the company's smart fridges, who also happens to have way too much data about you.
And also happens to like getting beat up way too much.
Yeah. And after some tutorials, they'll say, "Hey, you look pretty beat. Here, have a drink." And his chest opens up and he gives you a little health power up.
Yeah.
That stuff shouldn't matter very much. Like, theming it doesn't count for nothing, but also, bad or excessive tutorialization is a real problem. For me, it just didn't bug me as much as it should have, because I still had a ton of goodwill at the start. If it keeps going on, after about the 90 minute mark, I'll say, "All right, guys, come on." But
yeah, it's not necessarily, I think maybe this is it. It is so important that you understand the rhythm elements of these systems that I could see them, if there was solid playtesting on this, being like, no, we need to teach to the lowest common denominator here.
Yeah.
And we need to make it so foolproof that you understand the timing elements of this game that we're just going to tell you literally everything three times. You get the fridge tutorial, you get the stage tutorial, and you get usually like an in-game, try it yourself against actual enemies tutorial.
Yeah.
That's fine. I played this for 45 minutes and it felt like, the lead up to the first level, right? Mm-hmm. Like it felt like the tutorial. So fine, tutorialize me. But yeah, if I didn't, that goodwill tells me, okay, they're doing this for a reason, because some people need that amount of reinforcement. If I didn't have that goodwill, I would be like, all right, let me just play the game.
I can see them also aiming at possibly a younger audience with this too, who, babies will bop along to the beat of a thing, but like turn that into mechanics that it ends up being a kind of a different thing. I can see being frustrated. Just like, okay, I won this encounter, but it's still saying I got a D because I wasn't hitting the buttons at the right point. Yeah. Man, I wish I could turn off the grading.
That's a thing that action games like this do, and they did it. And like, it doesn't feel like anyone thought about that too much. Yeah. And I'd be very surprised if it rubbed that in your face at any point. Other than a quick report card at the end that can only serve to make you feel bad if you got less than the best.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it really cares about it too much.
Yeah. Also, they provide like a ton of, you do not just have to listen to the background track to know what the beat is. So they have visual indicators in there as well. Like you can just press the select button and it will bring up a convergence kind of meter where, little semicircles will move toward the center and you get a visual indication of the beat. There's a visual indication because you have like a little basically like a robot cat thing that floats around you that will beep to the beat. Things in the environment will beep to the beat, and also if you get if you are tapping on the beat, you get like a crowd cheer and like a little guitar string, little guitar strum kind of sound to it. So there's tons of stuff to reinforce
multiple redundancies.
Yeah, which I believe is smart.
I believe that is. Like, I trust them to know that's the level of effort that was required to get everyone on board to enjoy this game.
Yeah.
And aside from the literal tutorial sections, I don't mind any of the ongoing indicators.
No.
Being very fair. It does highlight, though, how this game works in a way that Metal Hellsinger did not for me.
Okay.
And I was trying to figure out why, and I think the key difference is that in Hi-Fi Rush, enemies attack on the beat.
Yeah.
And that is that factors into the way you dodge and everything. Whereas in Metal Hellsinger, you kind of have to fire your weapons on the beat, but nothing else goes on the beat. At least, as noticeably. Mm-hmm. So I think that made a big difference in terms of just like, rather than you having to be on a beat to optimize in a world that was not optimized, in this one, literally the world is on the beat with you.
Yeah.
And that changes the way that you interact with the game.
Hmm.
it feels like the right way to interact rather than a hindrance interacting.
Having everything work to the same rules is pretty good. I think that feels like an important part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This looks really sweet. I had not heard anything about this.
Oh, are you playing it on PC or Xbox?
Xbox.
Okay. I'm playing it on PC with a PS4 controller plugged in, and it does not recognize the controller, unfortunately.
So the prompts that it shows are the Xbox prompts.
No, it literally just does not recognize the controller. I've had to play it on mouse and keyboard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which isn't bad per se, but it's just I would much rather be, playing this on a controller.
Yeah.
So I had this problem once before with, I think it was Dreamscaper. Mm-hmm. And it's just like these smaller indie games, something gets crossed because other games work fine. And so normally what I would do and what I did with Dreamscaper was I'll just play this one on cloud streaming, except everything has to be on the beat. So I don't quite feel comfortable doing it on cloud streaming.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is good enough that I don't mind committing to mouse and keyboard to play it. I don't know if it's good enough that I would buy an Xbox controller to play it.
No, if everything else works. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the only reason I'm doing it on an Xbox is just because I wanted a no muss, no fuss version of it. I knew that there was going to be controller stuff. So I was like, I'm just going to play this in my living room. That's fine.
Wise choice.
Yeah. Any questions about Hi-Fi Rush? All right. For me, I have also continued, I did that Gus Fring from Breaking Bad simulator last week. I decided I'm going to be on my bullshit for a little while. I've got another city builder / colony sim.
Would someone stop giving him these?
where does he keep finding them?
This is like my toddler. Every time I look away, you got another graham cracker in your hands. We don't even have graham crackers right now. Did you hide them somewhere?
What's in your mouth, Cole? Drop it. So I've been playing a game. It's called Farthest Frontier. This is in early access. You're playing a colony of people who are sick and tired of the oppression in your medieval country of some European, but it doesn't map onto any real country that I have seen. Like maybe it's British or something. So you've decided to set out and go to unsettled land and start building your own little colony out there. This is kind of like Timberborn. It is a Frostpunk alike, to a degree, except in place of like an overriding kind of like mechanical theme. So in Frostpunk, it is heat. It is heat, hot and cold. In Timberborn, it is the water level. The floods and stuff like that. And this, it doesn't necessarily have one of those. It is more just an all-pervading complexity. That may or may not be your jam. And it is definitely not as focused of an experience as Frostpunk is. But also, I really like the kind of things that it's modeling. A previous one of these that I had done a couple years back was
Medieval Dynasty.
No, that was that's more of a survival kind of game. Mm-hmm. It was End Zone, A World Apart. It was the city builder, colony builder about people rebuilding after a nuclear holocaust. It's kind of similar to that in terms of the number of resources that you can get, and also like the need to build infrastructure and logistics and distribution for stuff. Like it's not enough just to have people gathering the resources. You also need to have like storehouses and have the roads built up between them, to make sure that like individual houses are eventually going to get stocked with firewood. You're building like markets around your living area. That is one thing. But that is one of the things that this does have as kind of a unifying kind of deal. Because once you're out of the survival, once you're out of the survival kind of era of it, you end up in like this city design. And instead of placing things around based on heat, you know, where in Frostpunk it is around heaters, but also it is around proximity to the main tower. This is very granularly modeling the desirability of buildings and like plots of land kind of stuff. So what this is doing is almost like doing a bit of like a zoning in reverse kind of deal, where it's like, all right, you can build this tannery. But if you build this tannery real near the residential areas, that is going to reduce the value of those properties because not everybody wants to be around while, you know, a guy's outside stirring a bucket of boiling brains and putting animal skin in it, you know?
So can't it's kind of imagine why not.
Yeah, yeah. And eventually, you know, again, after you get out of the survival phase, you end up, you know, trying to maximize your, you know, just like economic stability. So you want to have lots of high desirability residential areas with markets around them so you can tax and get in enough money to kind of do general upkeep and protection of this, because you're also in this hostile wilderness where I've not run into other people who might attack us and try and steal our stuff, mostly because I've played on easy so far to make all of my mistakes. Mm-hmm. And I just haven't run into it. But there's like random events. So there's like animal attacks. A bear got into my stores.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's like you got a bear and they're eating all your jams and your preserves. Yeah. A person got injured with it, trying to scare him out of there. They're like storms, lightning strikes and things like that.
Yeah.
That'll
you shouldn't have tried to call in the bear's tab.
You know, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. The bear needs help. The other thing, just like if you are wondering if this is your kind of your kind of deal, so I decided foraging was not doing enough for me. Fishing, it was just real hand to mouth. So I laid out a farm tract. Okay, so all right, okay, we're gonna start some agriculture up in here. And I went in, and instead of just like selecting, all right, we're gonna grow corn here, what you get is a very intricate interface for handling crop rotation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's like a 3-year cycle where different crops have different like tolerances to heat and frost, and also will have different effects on the quality of the soil. You know, like weed and kind of stuff. So you've got to like lay it out so that you are farming it, but also doing enough maintenance on the land and growing enough like, you know, let's say low value, but land modifying crops like peas. You know, things like that, in order to make sure that the land remains profitable. So like I saw that and I was like, yeah, this is really kind of finicky, but also I'm kind of here for it because it's well explained. And also I've not played one of these games that has gone that into detail. And it like immediately made me a second guess. Well, like, all right, I laid out like one big plot thinking, all right, we just want to maximize the surface area. This area here on like the heat map is showing that it's really fertile. Let's go. And I realized, no, what you want is a bunch of smaller tracks. Like it'll take more labor, but you can grow like a wider variety of tracks. And that actually was me learning. Weirdly, that was me learning the lesson of early agriculture, which is more smaller plots are better for both variety and resiliency for disaster. So, this is early access. I've not seen the level of let's say kind of jank that was inherent and definitely not fried chicken. This is, I think, further along, has kind of a higher degree of fit and finish to it. But I was having a very good time with it when I stopped playing, basically doing my easy mode burner town so I can go back in and not make what I realize are really, really bad mistakes.
Hmm. Yeah, I have never heard of this developer before. And the game, I guess, that they made before is called Grim Dawn.
Yeah.
Never heard of it, but apparently like it's got extremely positive reviews and people are saying this is like the sequel to Diablo 2 that we deserve.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that I missed Grim Dawn or have never heard of Crate Entertainment.
Yeah. I recognize the thumbnail for Grim Dawn. I did not seek this out. I learned about this game from that 6-second Steam trailer Twitter. And I was like, oh boy, I saw a Conestoga wagon. I saw a Conestoga wagon roll up to a big field and I saw them allocating portions of land. I saw a windmill go up and I was like, welp. Fuck. Oh, man. Any questions about Farthest Frontier?
It looks cool.
Yeah. Ben.
Yeah. We got a bunch of weird little things this week. I'll start off with the thing that's an actual video game. I've continued playing Days Gone. I think I talked about that last week. I'll talk about it more this week. I think last week I said it was kind of bad and it was supposed to get better. It has actually improved in some degrees and then it's gotten sideways stepped but continued to be bad in other degrees.
Oh no.
Okay.
So the map is basically doubled up. Like there's a complete new area to the south that I can go to. The biggest change between last week and this week is I gained enough trust with a camp that I could buy higher level weapons there. And one of which I think it's like a Moz W is like the gun that I could buy, but it's basically like an assault rifle. And the game is much more manageable when you have an assault rifle. You can take on like 5 or 6 zombies, no problem. The hordes, though not easy, can actually be dealt with instead of like being like instant death or I need to go climb a water tower. So that's been a really big game changer. A lot of mechanics too, I figured out how they work since last week. So I think, one of the things I mentioned was like, there's random traps where there's like a tripwire or like a sniper or something like that, that kind of gets sprung on you. There's a game mechanic in it where there's basically camps, like raider camps that'll be nearby where those events happen. And if you completely clean out the raider camps, then those events will not happen anymore. It'll be like safe for you to drive on the road. So I didn't know that's how that worked. Even the hordes of zombies there's like collectibles behind it where it's like, if you kill like 20 hordes across the map or whatever, you can unlock certain technologies. I don't know how that makes sense, but whatever. The funniest narrative part that has occurred between last week and this week is, they're trying to talk about how the hordes of zombies, or they're trying to like understand how they work, because that's like the biggest oppressive feature in the game. And they come to the conclusion that they are coming up from California. And so between everybody being white in this game, it being taken in place in the Pacific Northwest, this is the most like Portland/Ben type game I can think of. Where it's like the enemy now is Californians. So So I don't know. The narrative is just kind of like goofy and you really can't take it seriously at all. But the gameplay itself has improved a little bit and it's a little bit more fun. Basically I've focused more on like my relationship with there's like 3 different camps that I've unlocked at this point. And basically have enough money built up at all 3 of them so that you can fill up your gas tank of your bike. You can fill up your ammo. And if you clear out like the nests on the map, you can fast travel. It costs you gas, the amount of gas that it would take for you to drive there, but it's manageable. I've been able to upgrade my tank so it's big enough so I can fast travel to farther places. So with all those like progressions, the game's a lot more fluid now and it's like a lot more enjoyable. So I'm having a better time with it now than I did last week. It still has not redeemed itself at all narratively, but that's fine. I think that's mostly what I have to say about the game so far. I'm going to continue playing it. I'm not sure how far. I think I'm probably about 2/3 of the way through it, maybe. So I think I probably will finish it by next week, but we'll see. I don't know if there's any questions on it or not.
I mean, the way you're describing this makes it sound like, State of Decay. Like a less survival focused Day of Decay with a motorcycle.
Possibly. I have not played that one. I think I watched you play it.
Yeah.
One time. So I don't know how to speak to that. 'Cause I'm, yeah.
Yeah, no, I just the talk about trading with camps in order to gain favor with them to get mechanical benefits sounds like a system directly out of that.
Perhaps it's very similar to that then. All right, and then here we're going to play a mini game to see where Cole stops me of things that are less and less related to video games.
Okay.
There's one small one I wanted to talk about, which I played like about a week and a half ago, which is I played the Dune board game. This isn't the most recent Dune board game to come out, but this is the one from like the 1970s.
The one that got reissued, right?
Yeah, so this is an old-ass board game, but I was really impressed with how it plays. I think it's a really fun game, and I think it is even the more players you can get, the better. It's basically like this weird land control type game. You have this like circular map of Dune that has some weird sort of Mercadian projection going on or something.
You mean Arrakis?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Excuse me. Yes.
Arrakis. I'm actually not that big of a fan. I just know people are going to come in and say,
yeah, no, that's fair. Of Arrakis. And it's supposed to be somewhat, one-to-one with how the book, describes it, where there's different locations. There's of course like the main cities that the people stay in. There's like the main cities that the Fremen, are a part of. And then there's like things like the desert. There's a polar sink, which perhaps occurs in later books, but it's not in the first one. But the basic premise of the game is each person's a different faction. Like one group's the Fremen, one group's the Atreides, one group's the Harkonnen. You can be the Emperor, and there's like two others. The Bene Gesserit, I think, is how it's pronounced. And then I think Traitors. Traitors, like T-R-A-D-E-R. But the win condition of the game is the first person to own three of these five locations automatically wins the game at the end of the round. However, if you're playing with a six-player game, there's like no way that's going to happen. So they have an alliance mechanic where you can make alliances with one another's, and if a given alliance owns four of the five locations, then they win the game. I won't go too far into the mechanics of the game just for the sake of time and brevity, but the feeling of playing it and the way that the game mechanics support the different factions is so well done. Like there's treachery mechanics, there's movement mechanics where like the Fremen can move around Dune like much more quickly than the other factions can. Your leaders can become traitors in the heat of battle so that they no longer support you, which is very much in theme with the book. Harkonnen is really good at creating traitors, which is also in theme with the book. Mm-hmm. And the alliance mechanic, even though I played a three-player game, so we just had a single person win, if you play with six players and having to try and navigate these alliances that could break, or you know, this sort of betrayal that can happen at any point in time, it's really, really fun. And it really, really feels like the theming of the book. So I was very, very impressed by it, especially because it's a game that's like 50 years old at this point. And like game design for board games has mostly flourished like in the last like 20, 25 years. Yeah. So anyway.
Sounds really ambitious and modern in terms of having like betrayal play.
Yeah. And there's like a sandstorm mechanic where that kind of like goes around the planet, and there's like worms that can come at any given point. Yeah. Anyway, it was very impressive. So anyway, people are trying to get spice too. That's like a main resource of the game, of course. But anyway, all right. The last thing I'll talk about, and probably won't talk much about this because I doubt everyone's going to be at the level, is I also wanted to bring up The Last of Us. Have people been watching that show?
No,
but I want to. So no spoilers.
I won't spoil anything.
I mean, this past Sunday's episode made people freak out. It was the Nick Offerman episode. I know that.
Yeah. 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 Show's really good. We should talk about it at some point in time. But but that's definitely like a high point of the week now, is like waiting to watch that episode when it drops. They have met or exceeded the quality of the game in each episode. So it's very impressive. And then they have a companion podcast that's interesting as well, that what's the character actor's name? Troy Baker. He's like the host of it, and they'll just go over the episode and kind of some of the decisions they made and how they came about it. But yeah, it's all of that is really interesting.
And it's cool to see a really good video game adaptation, because that is few and far in between. So
quite rare.
Yeah. That's all I got.
Okay. No, I mean, all of those are, I mean, you talked about The Last of Us show before, and mm-hmm. we talked about board games here. You're good.
All right.
Yeah. Multiplayer. Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I watched the new Mario movie trailer, and Donkey Kong is just Seth Rogen. So since they're doing a movie where all the celebrities just play themselves instead of characters, I suggest we do a video game where the celebrities play themselves instead of characters. So what celebrity or notable person would you want to play as in a video game? Not a character voiced by them, but that person.
Brian says, easiest Nick Cage of my life. Yeah. Yeah. A little management sim where you have to just, you're eventually going to sell all of your castles. But you got to decide what order so you can keep as many castles as you can for as long as you can.
Have you never played Castle Crashers? This has been done. No.
Ben, what does Callum say?
Callum says, Alan Rickman, and then followed by some necromancy may be required.
I mean, deceased celebrities count. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know anything special. Just a working British actor.
He's not going to have a surprise face on him this time in Die Hard. It's messed up.
do it as Alan Rickman. You've got to do a bunch of QTEs, like very difficult QTEs to continue doing his American accent that he tries in Die Hard. Yeah. Jala, what does Greg say?
Greg says, Tom Brady during the prime of his career, money, popularity, skills, married to a supermodel, what's not to like?
Oh, Tom Brady.
His politics, the team he's on.
Sorry, I mean, Greg. you can play this. You just set Madden to like the easiest possible mode, and then now you're playing as Tom Brady.
Oh man, just lots of dunks on the football, man. Dennis, what does Naveen say?
Naveen says, "Y'all ever get the desire to crawl into John Malkovich's mind and like control him? Just me? Okay."
That's pretty good. Don't watch the end of that movie. Don't spoil for yourself how it's going to turn out. Let's see here. Peter says, I'd go with Keanu Reeves. And the story is based on playing as him doing his stunts throughout his movie career. However, the final boss is some Scott Pilgrim level BS where you have to battle Mega Keanu. Yet there is a twist, and the only way to beat him is by not beating him. Like in Final Fantasy VII, how you actually can't lose to Sephiroth, but in this case it happens by not pressing anything. I'm thinking that it ends up being a side-by-side JRPG battle menu, but in this scenario there is no text in the menu.
Now I'm going to be using the confused Keanu face.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was just going to move us on. What are you going to say?
I'm imagining this being like the Sneak King Burger King tie-in video game where you just walk around surprising people by being nice to them.
Yeah.
Except it's not nearly as creepy.
The only time he actually hurt somebody is when when you are reliving that interview where the person misidentified which of Bill and Ted he was. I played Ted, dude. It's just the most mortified a person has ever looked.
Oh man.
Oh my gosh. Ben, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says Morgan Freeman as the narrator.
So a text-to-speech sim.
Jala, what does Daniel say?
Daniel says, Carrot Top. He's super jacked, and as a prop comic, I know he has a great inventory system.
I like this idea, just inventory management of like watermelons and phones.
I mean, it would take like the LucasArts era of adventure games to its absurdest conclusion, which is you are just making puns with objects. That actually might be fun.
Yeah.
Huh.
I like this answer.
Yeah. I wish it wasn't associated with Carrot Top, the chairman of the board himself. let's see here. That was you, Jala, on Carrot Top there? Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. Dennis, what does Gwilym say?
Gwilym says, Natasha Lyonne is a perfect video game protagonist, any genre. She's really having a moment, isn't she?
I don't know who she is.
She's in the it's not called Bullshit. It's called Poker Face. Thank you.
Thank you,
voice in my head.
With the Mountain Goats is John Darnielle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't she the person who's in like the Russian Doll? Yeah.
Yeah, Russian Doll, Orange is the New Black.
Did you know Carrot Top is 57?
Oh my.
Ooh, he looks a lot older.
This is looking like Carrot Bottom here.
I have seen some things that she's in, but she played Nichols in Orange is the New Black. There we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see. This will be me. Tyler says Danny DeVito.
First person shooter.
Here's the thing. That's Frank.
Oh, man.
I mean, I too would like to play a game where you're just Frank from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but this is just Danny DeVito. So you are running a limoncello company. You are making very strong lemon liqueur.
it's a getting over it clone where you're just trying to reach the top shelf.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
God, he is a treasure.
You're eating carrots during the Academy Awards. They would remember that one.
Oh, man. Let's hear, Ben. What does Rookie say?
Rookie says, it would be fun to play as Gary Busey in nearly any genre. Every playthrough is a Malkavian playthrough?
Mm-hmm. That's the clan in Vampire the Masquerade that is a little crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Man, it's weird that he's still alive.
Still here, huh? All right.
Yeah. I think he's still alive.
Yeah.
Not going to check. Because it's more fun this way.
No, he's 78.
Oh, unlikely. Wait,
I did not answer if he was still alive. I just said how old he was. He's okay. Gary Busey,
he
treasure you. Yeah.
Let's not go too far now.
Yeah. He never dies. His eyes just get further and further apart.
Jala, round us out with what Eli says.
Eli says, the whole Gabriel Knight trilogy, but you're just playing as acclaimed actor of the stage and Scream Tim Curry.
Nope. Yeah.
You're just playing Tim Curry as he records the lines.
Yeah, Eli did not say Scream. I said Scream, and then
they're
I
horror
just
games.
Rolled with it.
Good one. Yeah. You know, keep it on the Last of Us theme. I would say Nick Offerman, make it kind of a good version of Workshop Simulator.
Mm-hmm. Any way to a simulator game.
Yes. Yeah, no, I just, like I said, I've decided to be on my bullshit for a little while. Yeah. He runs a wood. he runs a wood shop, the wood shop that, Ron Swanson, makes stuff in Parks and Rec. That's actually Nick Offerman's.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He wrote a book about it. It's good.
Very cool.
Yeah. Let's hear Ben. How about you?
Here's my pre-can joke answer is you play a day in the life as David Cage. And it's like all the Heavy Rain games where it's like, should I be misogynistic today? Press the square button. You know, that sort of thing.
Should I be misogynistic or racist at this point?
Yeah. Ugh. It all leads to the same place. There's really not that much divergence.
Yeah. No, there are no consequences. People still make games with you.
David.
Jala, how about you?
Greta Thunberg.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Nice.
Just dunking on people so hard they get arrested.
Well, and then, you know, like everything else that she does is also really interesting, but also every once in a while she just appears in the press because of that.
Yeah. Man, just a game about leading a process, like leading a protest that is not a state of the, or no, wait, no. What was that game? It was a Rockstar game. It was modeled after the world.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, man. Shit.
It was
a game about
state of emergency.
So that is that, but without being terrible and calling protests bad.
That like was actually, such an unfortunate game occurring right after Grand Theft Auto, where everyone's like, oh, this will be just as good as that. Let's buy it up.
Yeah.
Womp womp.
Yeah. And Dennis, how about you?
All right. Follow me here. Octodad, but it's George Santos. You just fake your way through every situation.
And that's funny because he may or may not still be in Congress when we speak next.
But I'm not even convinced he's human. He could be an octopus. We would never know.
Man, what a country we've got.
Wow.
Yeah. Fun question. Fun answers. If thank you, Dennis, for posting that. If you would like to participate in these in the future, you can go to the Duckfeed community group on Facebook. Watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons and hang around and talk about stuff with folks if you would like to.
The End Boss.
Now it is time for The End Boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let's see, Jala, what's happening in Australia?
Australia's new national cultural policy includes the Australian Interactive Games Fund, which will reinstate video game funding for local developers there. Funding was abolished 10 years ago. The original version of the AIGF was broader in scope than the current iteration, and its closure ended up forcing a bunch of large studios to shutter up, and also that forced the withdrawal of a lot of international devs. So the focus of the current plan is on digital tax offset with an emphasis on digital games and small to medium sized development studios. It should at least help encourage some folks to get back to making video games from Australia, but like, you know, they're kind of like late in coming to this, you know.
So. But I mean, between getting rid of the games fund and their ratings board being the way that it is, Australia might be the most anti-video game country in the English speaking world.
Craziness.
Used to be Germany, but not English speaking, but you know. Well, good that they're getting started again.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Like, if you suddenly see more games out of Australia, you know what's going on.
It's real depressing to fire up an indie game and see in the opening, like, oh, this was funded by Norway.
Yeah.
Like, there are countries that will spend money making sure that there are, like, good cultural output in new and exciting industries.
Georgia seems to be on point. Georgia has a whole fund for stuff like that.
State or country?
Well, no, but I'm saying like within the U.S. as a country.
Oh, yeah.
Georgia, the state, does a good job.
Oh. Yeah, I've not seen that. It's just it is a rarity. It's one of those like
There was I forget. I think it was the name of it was Lydia or something. There was that one short game that I played that was like. Something about like this person dealing with their alcoholic father and all this other stuff. And like the narrative of the game is very depressing, but like it was funded actually in part by the state of whatever country that came from. I forget which country it was, but it actually funded by like the alcohol commission of the government. So anyway, it was this interesting game, but also interesting the way that it came about. The government actually saved it from basically not being produced.
I can't find what country it's from, but I do see that you talked about it in October of 2021.
Yeah.
On the episode, Nothing is Allowed to Die.
Yeah, so I did mention the country because I did due diligence and research at that time, but I can't for the life of me remember now. Maybe it's someplace like Sweden or something. I don't remember. But
Ben.
Sorry, I had to go dig for this because I knew it was a thing. hate to pull us back. But yeah, Georgia, Like sponsors games, Killing Floor 1 and 2, Brawlhalla, and Dungeon Crawlers, a whole bunch of them were made in Georgia. I'm going through this. Warhammer 40K game was made there. Tribes Ascend. Yeah, a bunch of stuff.
Okay.
I know I've seen their name on stuff before. I'm not crazy. I promise. I'm not crazy. Smite is made in Georgia.
Yeah. No, they've got like a big movie. I don't know, used to before recent upsets, but yeah. Also, Lydia is from Finland.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what's happening in the world of Star Wars?
It's getting pushed back 6 weeks. So this news story came out, I guess, today. So Jedi Fallen Order sequel is supposed to come out mid-March. It's getting pushed back to April 28th. Respawn said the game is content complete, but they're just working on bugs right now. So that's fine. Fine by me, but just heads up.
Yeah, I mean, if it's better now than for it to be released and have its entire reputation be, hey, this is a buggy mess. Yeah. It's smart. Mm-hmm.
I just assume that any, you know, release date, like the first one and the second one and probably the third one, mm-hmm. are going to get delayed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I assume this is a hard decision on their part since like March is the end of the fiscal year for a lot of companies. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that that's why they wanted to release it mid-March, but whatever.
Yeah, they probably figured they had wiggle room of some kind. So it seems smart to me. Just more time for your games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. Hey, Dennis, we're talking about a release. What about the opposite of a release?
Yeah, I got a double feature here because games are dropping like flies, specifically live service games. So back to back, both Apex Legends Mobile and Rumbleverse, the pro wrestling themed battle royale, are announced to be closing, shutting down their servers. Rumbleverse is going to be at the end of February. So like it's got a month left. Apex Legends Mobile is shutting down in May. So, this begs the question, how the hell is Roller Champions still going?
Is that a big multiplayer?
No, it's not big. It's another one. It's another one of these, like, you know, a multiplayer focused games that it kind of launched and failed to find an audience. And now is just kind of coasting out there aimless. Mm. Yeah, it's just it's weird to see a crunch kind of coming in on these different games. So, yeah, no more Apex Legends Mobile, although it doesn't sound like many people were playing it in the first place.
Yeah.
And then Rumbleverse, while being a really interesting idea of doing a battle royale that is not dependent on shooter mechanics, and instead is on in kind of action game mechanics, kind of has officially been KO'd.
Mm. Nice headline there. yeah, no, I just service games are going to shut down. It's inevitable. It's a problem for, you know, preservation, but it's going to happen.
Yeah, it is. You know. Yeah, it is unfortunate. And, you know, so there are some kinds of games that you can't play without a bunch of people to play them with. Mm-hmm. And I'm not against designing a game that way. It just does make it more likely that it's going to disappear from the world.
Yeah. I've got one, just again, because I'm on my bullshit, I guess. There's a big, Square Enix Final Fantasy event. I believe it was earlier today as we're recording, where a few things were announced. January the 31st is officially Final Fantasy VII Day. There's going to be a demo released for Theatrhythm, the new, version of the Final Fantasy, rhythm game. All that's fine, but it's not as important as the fact that there is going to be Final Fantasy VII DLC for Power Wash Simulator.
The least expected crossover here.
I wouldn't have, if you asked me like yesterday, would you want to bet $1 that this is going to happen at 10,000 to 1 odds? I would say I don't know. I can buy half of a candy bar for a dollar. but they showed off a video. You're doing some power washing at the Seventh Heaven bar. You are power washing Cloud's motorcycle. You are washing down the guard scorpion. They're going to be just a bunch of stuff like that. That's going to be coming. We don't know when, but man, what an unexpected but also really smart move.
Yeah,
like, I like this a lot, actually.
Okay, at the bottom of the article, I can't tell if this is like people memeing or if this is actually this came with it. It says Power Wash Simulator is getting a Tomb Raider map.
Yes, that was an earlier announcement. That was like a couple weeks ago.
Oh wow. Yeah. Okay. Huh. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Power Wash Simulator is crushing it.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah.
The credit. Thank you so much for listening to level number 445. We really appreciate you taking the time. You know the things that you can do to help us out. Not going to spend a whole bunch of time here. Want to take that instead. Jala, do you want to reiterate the call for the call for help for your friend?
Yes. So again, my friend Marcus is in the midst of potential eviction because of COVID-related unemployment stuff. So if you can help out, it's patreon.com/randomrain. You can also hit them up on social media, Marcus_Rasan, RASAAN.
Yeah. Consider it. And I would also like to thank Gwen, our producer and editor, for the great work she does. Want to give an opportunity, Dennis, what's going on with Deck of Wonders?
Oh yeah, it's finally shipping in the US. Shipments are going out. I mean, it's literally thousands of shipments, so they're being batched a little bit. Not botched, I hope. Batched. So some people are getting them a little bit later than others, but they are going out. They're in people's hands. I'm getting pictures from everyone. I'm getting stories from everyone. Very exciting. So, if you pre-ordered, if you backed and you're in the US, the game should be in your hands soon.
Fantastic. Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams, on Twitch at DuckVTV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can come hang out on the Deck of Wonders Discord and talk about Deck of Wonders with an increasing amount of people.
I'm Jellachan in all the places that you can find me, including jellachan.place, where I talk about various other things that are not video games.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, I've just got one.
Me too.
Which is lots and lots of Gokus.
I just have one that is Carrot Bottom.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Let's see. I have three. We're on the path for no repeats here. I have Because Internet.
Okay.
Jala.
That's a Don Glover album name.
I have And That's What It's Like to Talk to Violet, and then I have What's in Your Mouth, Cole.
I have two. I have Fire Emblem Echoes, colon, not horny.
Okay. And
as the first duplicate, I have What's in Your Mouth, Cole.
I'm going to stand Fire Emblem, colon, not horny.
That one's pretty funny.
So I need adjudication on this, Jala, because I think you wrote down the title that you said, which was Echoes, but I know you were talking about Engage as the non-horny one.
Yeah.
How would you want that? Okay.
Yeah, it's Fire Emblem Engage is the not horny one. Although Fire Emblem Echoes is also not horny. The one I was referring to at the time was Engage.
Gotcha. All right. by laughs, it seems to be Carrot Bottom.
I mean, I'm fine with that.
It's not being used in the sexual sense, although it is implied.
That makes it even better, though. You know,
I don't know if I'll ever be okay with a carrot bomb.
You're the one who said it.
I won't judge people who are for a carrot bottom. Dennis said it. I would not. Those words did not come out of my mouth.
How dare you?
Jala, how do you feel about Carrot Bottom?
I don't feel anything about Carrot Bottom.
Okay, let's do that.
But Jala, you're too tired to feel anything.
I'm too fine. Yes, so. Exactly. You understand.
All right, then it is decided.